11:11, make a wish. It's 11:11 a.m. on February the 14th, 2014. Happy Valentine's Day. I'm late today. I'm late today because I slept. This was rather an unusual day so far. In that, it's Friday, but my wife stayed home sick today, and the kid didn't have school today. It's a school improvement day, so I didn't have to have her out at 7, which meant I didn't have to be up at 5 in order to get her up at 6. I didn't have to be up at 5 anyway. Lately I've been sleeping until 5:30. Day's half gone by the time I get out of bed. No, not really. So, yeah, I slept in. I slept till 9. I would have slept later probably, but my wife came into the bedroom at 9 o'clock. Started ramming around, so that was pretty much the end of it. I did get up earlier. I got up at like 5:30. Stayed up for probably 15 minutes and then went back to bed. I'm not sure why I got up, but I wasn't also sure that I could go back to sleep, but I thought, well, why not? I'll give it a shot. And sure enough, I slept for another 3 hours. So clearly I was tired, clearly I needed the rest. Late nights, rehearsal pickups, early mornings, off school, taking a toll on the old man. Taking a toll on the kid too, so she's still sleeping, I think. I'm not surprised. So today is a spring day here, 40 degrees. There's water running everywhere. There was water running yesterday everywhere. It was close to 45 in the afternoon, I think. So there's some shady spots that still have icy patches, but most of the sidewalks are clear now. I say most because there's one quarter mile stretch that is still icebound because it's in the shade. Kind of a pain. That's odd. Endomondo didn't give me a reading. I wonder why. Probably because it isn't running. I know it perfectly well that I started it up. I wonder what happened. Oh well. Doesn't matter now. One of the icy patches crossing the street. It's water slicked and still quite solidly ice. Yuck. Anyway, so yesterday I talked about statistics, and not too surprisingly, the statistics professional on Digital Book World did not seem too open to a critique of her choice of statistical test. Not too surprising, it's really a bad choice. And I can only assume that if she had used the correct statistical measurement, that the results would have been somewhat different and might have caused her some problems in terms of credibility. So, be that as it may, it doesn't really matter. I do sort of wish I still had access to the software so I could run my own tests, but the truth is I don't really care enough to take the extra step and go download the data and take it over to school and find somebody who can run it for me. So yesterday I did get a good deal of editing done on Full Share. I'm not done by any means, but I got a blue day out of it, not a green day, but I got a blue day out of it. It was quite a lot. It was a good effort. Wasn't where I needed to be, but I got some quality time spent with a red pen and a book, so it worked out pretty well. Today that's unlikely to be the case. I actually was toying with the idea of not walking today. My feet and legs are really feeling the burn from not walking for 3 days, for 11 days, and then 2 days in a row of making the walk. But I figured, well, give it a shot. I was hoping that by walking, I would walk some of the stiffness out. And my hips are, I gotta say, my hips are not as bad as they were. But my calves are complaining bitterly. So, yeah. It's all right. I'll go home. Get something to eat. I think part of the problem is that I'm hungry. And I didn't get breakfast because I didn't get up until 9 o'clock. And at this point, it's almost time for lunch, so. So I'll eat something when I get back. And then retire to my rocking chair. Get the walker out. Canes and crutches. And hobble around. No, I'm kidding. Although the rocking chair is probably the chair of choice for editing, simply because it's comfortable. It's got a nice view of the out-of-doors, something I don't see unless I'm walking, very much. We don't have any rehearsals tonight. We don't have any after-hours events this evening, so perhaps an early bedtime would be possible tonight. I could go to bed early. Caught up on my sleep. Oh, yeah. I'm not talking because I'm barely alive. I'm not thinking. What I'm thinking about is critique. I was helping an author with a critique, and it was one of those awkward pieces that, I'm going to have to be careful here because I've taken a public stance that there's no such thing as a good story or a bad story, good writing and bad writing. There's just writing that I don't like, stories that I don't like, and stories that I do like. And when the story doesn't work for me, I have to allow for the fact that it might work for someone else. Now he's causing me a certain amount of disbelief in the monk pool, in the writing community. Because some guy asked the question, can good writing overcome a bad story? And the answer is, that's not even a question. Can a good movie overcome a good book? The problem is that there's no objective standard for good in either of those. There's no objective standard for good writing. There's no objective standard for good story. There's only stories you like and stories you don't like. So, this is a good book is a shorthand for, this is a book that I liked. I love the way this guy writes. It's very clearly not good writing necessarily. It's just something that appeals to you on a visceral level. And ironically, the guy who posed the question originally said that the first and really the only criteria for a good story is that it has appeal and acceptance by his audience. And that's exactly right. That's exactly what makes good writing. And the problem is, just because you're not in the audience doesn't mean it's bad writing. So they keep coming back with these stupid analogies of, well, yes, but 50 Shades of Grey was just terrible. No, 50 Shades of Grey was resonant with his audience, and then it got enough hype. There were a lot of people who read it just to find out what everybody was hyping about, and some were off-put by the content, some were off-put by the use of grammar and syntax, some were upset with the way people were hyping the book up. And it's like, this was, and 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon was way more than whether it was good writing, or good story or bad story. It was much more about market. It was much more about social dynamic. It was much more about everything other than the book. And whether you like the book or not, is really whether or not you think it's a good story or not, whether or not you think it's good writing or not. And I've never. Well, no, because I've said it myself. P.S. Power is one of those people who has really, really, really intrigued me in that he's taken stories that I find fascinating and cloaked them in language that is tiresome. But I break this down. Somebody complained about this. Somebody asked me about this. Could I offer, for instance, concrete examples? And what I talked about was that I think what most people complain about when they talk about bad writing is they're talking about bad production values. They're talking about a failure on the part of the writer or the publisher. In the case of a self-published author, the author is the publisher. And the skills that are breaking down have nothing to do with writing. They have everything to do with editing. Everything to do with grammar and syntax and flow. And failing to hire the expertise needed to deal with the mechanics of the story that you're trying to tell. It's sort of like, if you say covers. Okay, now, the writer is not necessarily a graphic artist, and yet a lot of writers put really horrible covers. Why are they horrible covers? Well, they're horrible covers not because it's bad writing. They're horrible covers because they violate some of the basic rules of aesthetic layout and composition. Could I say that about writing? Well, no, because the answer is, it's not a fault of the writer. It's a fault of the publisher for failing to understand that they did not have the appropriate skills to produce a cover that was acceptable. It's a production value. It's not story value. Mainstream press has been putting horrible covers on books for decades, perhaps centuries. And the aesthetic of cover design has shifted and continues to shift every new marketing cycle. There's a new aesthetic, there's a new layout, there's a new feel. You can tell 60s and 70s covers from 80s and 90s covers, from 90s covers, from 2000s covers. You can tell the difference when you look at the cover. You know, you can tell 1950s covers. God knows you can tell 1950s covers. But there's this... If you don't have the skill to do the task, then you need to hire the skilled don. And writing the story is only one skill. The better your grammar, the better your command of the language, the easier the editor's job is going to be. A good editor can save a bad story. A good editor, a bad editor, can ruin a good story. A good editor and a good story is magical, and that's what everybody is trying for. And again, I'm falling into the same semantic traps of calling a story good or bad. A story that is one that will find an audience. And I guess it comes back to something that people really don't want to accept, and that's that popularity does in fact denote good writing. Because if a story is popular, then it appeals to its audience. If it's appealing to an audience, it must de facto be good writing, even though it doesn't appeal to an individual critic. It doesn't appeal to an individual taste. And that's what it comes back down to, is individual taste. So it was actually a pretty decent conversation about production values and about good writing and bad writing and about the nature of what makes those two ideals important. I know, I think it's part because I'm so sensitized because I took such criticism for the Cher books. Not so much the Tanith Fairport books, because those have not had the same kind of critique, but they're also, while they're still my story, they're also much more, they have much more visible conflict. They have much more surface level for people to bite on for shallow reading. And yet there's still enough depth there for people who are reading carefully to get something from. So I think the Tanith Fairport books work a little bit better from a commercial standpoint. Are they better writing? No, I don't think so. Even going back through and cringing on what I put in the first three Cher books, and I do cringe. The reality is that I was trying to do something specific, and there's parts of it where I thought I succeeded, and there are parts of it that I thought I didn't. And that's why I kept going, and kept pushing, and kept writing new books, to try to figure out, okay, well, how would I do this better? How would I do this in a way that I feel better about the story that's being told, that I feel better about the accessibility of the story? I mean, there was a lot of repetition in the first three books because I was trying to tell the story in the way Ishmael would recount various events differently to different people. And one of the things that I discovered was that I didn't actually change that much. So the differences, if they existed at all, were subtle. They were very subtle. And that was, you know, in many cases, what I thought was on the page wasn't actually on the page. So one of my later tasks was to make sure that what I wanted on the page actually showed up on the page and not just existed in my head as being there. Now, is that good writing or bad writing? I don't know. It certainly appeals to a fairly wide audience, because between the audio and the text, there's at least, well, if I just add them up, there's like 50,000 people. If I allow for some amount of overlap, there's still 40,000 people who like the books. So obviously they appeal to someone, and so that makes some good writing, at least. That was the best writing I could do at the time. At any rate, I am at the back gate. I don't know how long this walk has been. I don't know how long this talk has been. It doesn't really matter because tomorrow's another day. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.